The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available as always on iTunes, Stitcher, and nfl.com/shek.
S-H-E-K, Shek.
Well, we're coming at you. It is 3:30 in the p.m. local time out here on the Pacific Coast. The West Coast, I believe, is what they like to call it. Either way, that means that NFL football is about to kick off in prime time. Monday Night Football, Pittsburgh Steelers at the Tennessee Titans. You likely, if you are listening to this, already know the result of that game, so we won't address that one too much. We have gotten a pretty good snapshot of the weekend that was in the NFL 2014, so we're going to kibitz about it right now with one of our favorite guys here. He doesn't shadow the door here in Studio 66. Maximum Strength! Nearly enough. You watch him, though, on NFL Network, on NFL Fantasy Live, kibitzing. It's Marcus Grant. What's the poop, fella?
I'm glad to be here. I always appreciate getting the invite.
Yes, of course. Now, there is still some confusion. If you watch the Sheck Report on a weekly basis, there have been some appearances by someone who may or may not be Marcus Grant, or maybe Geno Smith. That still is unclear. But let's break it down here, Marcus Grant. Do you have any fantasy tips? Maybe we'll get into some of those. But broad strokes here, the fascinating weekend of pro football, the thing that jumped out to me, with the exception of the impressive Green Bay Packers victory, which, I mean, that team, you know, I guess
they look
really
scary right now.
They just look about scary. Unstoppable. I know that the Patriots looked dynamite and there were a lot of top end performances, but unstoppable is kind of the word. Against the Bears, the Eagles don't have the world's greatest defense, but, I mean, listen, that is on a historic roll. Certainly number 12 for that team is on a historic roll. But the thing that I take away more than anything else is, and maybe it has to do with the dip in the weather now, but it feels like it's about the teams that are doing it are grinding it out on the ground all of a sudden, highlighted by the performance out of the kid from New England, Jonas Gray, last night. I mean, last night. But it seems like that's a pervasive trend now all of a sudden after, 2.5 years now of watching teams run option read, things like that. And you're still seeing some of that. And, in fact, specifically, the game in Kansas City was pure heaven, I thought. I thought it was like watching an old Big 8 game between Oklahoma and Nebraska. It seemed for a while there like neither team would ever throw a pass. And, in fact, they were running straight option plays at some stretches.
Yeah, that was wild, wasn't it? Jamal Charles scores on an option pitch from Alex Smith. Here's the thing. And this applies. It applies in football. It applies in baseball, basketball, what have you. Whenever you have these newfangled offensive systems that are great and they're trendy and they put up all these points and they're really fun to watch, so you get the read option or you get five wide receivers and it's a lot of fun to watch. What ends up winning games is just the tried and true method of how the sport was always played. I mean, look at the San Francisco Giants, the Kansas City Royals, go to the World Series this year. Those teams did the same things that have worked in baseball for 100 years. They moved runners along, they pitched well, they played good defense, they manufactured runs. Those two teams end up in the World Series. And you talk about the NFL right now. And so for all the good things that the Packers do, and watching Aaron Rodgers and Jordy Nelson is so much fun. But the fact that they can still run the ball, they can still hand it to Eddie Lacy and get him the ball 15 to 20 times, and he will grind it out. That Jonas Gray can get the ball 38 times for the Patriots and grind out almost 200 yards. Those are the things that are going to make a difference when you get to December and January. And, you know, for the Colts, it's great having Andrew Luck be able to throw all these guys, but now if Ahmad Bradshaw is hurt, Trent Richardson has been a disappointment. It could come back to bite them if they can't control the clock and they can't grind out those tough yards to get tough wins in key situations.
Well, yeah, it's an interesting – that's one point, right. It feels like as good as the Colts are capable of being. And I said 2 weeks ago, they've lost their last game of 2014. So as it turns out, I was wrong. And as you know, just like the late, great Jerry Orbach at the end of Dirty Dancing says, when I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. And so I was wrong about this Colts team. And yeah, I mean, what are they going to do come January if they can't spin the clock at all? The other thing is, and this is not exclusive to the Colts, every team, unless you can throw one out and black tie behind the glass, let me know if I'm missing somebody. The bizarre aspect of this season, and there's always, you know, the last, whatever, 15 or 20 years now, there's been parity and all of that. But has there ever been a year where every team in the NFL has taken at least one whipping? I mean, every team, whoever wins the Super Bowl is going to have been beaten by three touchdowns at some point.
Yeah.
Is that that can't have ever happened in NFL history or in the Super Bowl era, at least. I mean, the Chiefs pounded the Patriots 41-14 or whatever that score was. The Patriots have now whipped the Broncos, who, by the way, got whipped by the Rams. The Broncos scored 7 points. Oh, and by the way, you know how you heard after the game, no one saw this one coming. I'll tell you who did see this one coming. One Dave Damischer.
Oh, look at that.
I predicted it. I said Rams over the Broncos. Even I didn't anticipate a meager 7 points, though. But isn't that a crazy thing?
It is kind of a wild
thing. The Steelers killed the Colts.
And somewhere, Paul Tagliabue is smiling. Because that was kind of his great legacy to the league, right? Is that he created parity. He made it so that the phrase, any given Sunday, actually took on meaning. I mean, that any given Sunday, literally any team could win. And it is probably even more apt now than it was when Tagliabue was running the league. That really, any given Sunday, that a team like the Rams that had been so schizophrenic all year could shut down the juggernaut that is the Denver Broncos. That the Patriots could go from looking just awful at the start of the season to looking like the Patriots we've come to know for the last decade or so. And the fact that Aaron Rodgers could tell everybody to R-E-L-A-X in week 3, and now the Packers are just this juggernaut.
Wait a second. What did you just say?
R-E-L-A-X.
Oh, you said A. I thought you spelled it with 2 E's, which would be terrific. That still wouldn't get the award, though, for the best comment of the weekend. That goes to Rob Gronkowski. If you missed that in the pregame, he's talking to Rodney Harrison in a little pre-tape thing, and Rodney Harrison asks him, what was it like when you looked across the line and you saw Von Miller was lined up to try and control you in your pass route? And he said, I thought it was a pretty well matchup. I also once talked to Rob Gronkowski at the Super Bowl. Matt Money Smith and I were interviewing Rob Gronkowski, and we like to ask silly questions, as you may or may not know.
I've heard that, yes.
And so we asked him, if you could only use one utensil for the rest of time at the expense of all other utensils,
right,
which one utensil would you want? He didn't know what a utensil was.
What?
Well, he didn't know what a utensil was.
Can I say spork?
That is, I feel not like a little bit.
Is that cheating?
Right? A spork isn't a utensil?
No, not everyone uses that term utensil. Granted, you should know what it means.
not everyone uses the word utensil. What
when
do you
I was
use?
In high school, I growing up, we used cutlery. So when I was in high school in Orlando, I used that word cutlery, and all my friends and teammates all looked at me like, what the heck is that? What's cutlery?
Cutlery. Like,
cutlery is a quarterback who goes out and throws for 300 yards, but maybe has a couple of picks to go along with his
cutlery,
touchdown.
Yeah.
That's that. You know, he had a cutlery day.
Yeah,
you know?
Mark Sanchez was very cutlery
right.
against the Packers defense, wasn't he? Yeah, he looked downright cutlery. So I think it's quite a thing that all the teams, I mean, the Packers get housed in Seattle in week one. Seattle, have they gotten downright pounded by anybody? Have they taken a lashing?
Not pounded.
No, they haven't taken any
bad
losses.
They lost the Rams,
but,
you know, which is, I know it was a home game for the Rams, but that was surprising a little bit at the time, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the spread in that game. But, it's whoever wins the Super Bowl, the bottom line is they will not have this air, this mystique. And I, as I always say, Marcus Grant, I think that is to the detriment of the sport. I think the teams that win should be dominant. I don't think in baseball it's good. It's a nice story if you're a Giants fan that they did it, and they did it the right way, and they got their act together at just the right time. But it to me, it undermines the importance of the regular season when you see that. And it's why I keep saying with this, with the arrival of this Final Four now in college football, it's about the perfect setup. Because there is no team, the fifth-rated team. You know, this debate going on right now, well, who should it be? Should it be Mississippi State or should it be Ohio State? Whoever it is has no claim to number one. Nobody. If you're that far away from number one, then you don't probably have a very realistic conversation that says, here's why we're the best team in the country.
I will disagree slightly in the sense that every now and then it is fun to have that underdog team that comes out of nowhere and wins. But I would say yes. If it is every year where, you know, you're getting into the end of the regular season and you have a whole bunch of teams just kind of muddled all together and nobody has distinguished themselves, that does get old. Yes, you know, love the Yankees or hate the Yankees. Love the Patriots or hate the Patriots. Like, a dynasty is good for sports because it gives you – either you love them or you hate them. The worst thing you could say is that you don't care about them. If you love them, if you hate them, there's at least an emotion there. There's a reason for you to tune in. Either you want them to win or you want to see them go down in flames. But to be apathetic because I'm watching a 9-7 team that made it to the playoffs and they're just making a run, yeah, that gets old after a while.
Well, here's the thing. There is parity in the NFL, clearly, based on these results. Except for the fact that it is more often than not when you look at the teams that are going to get to the postseason again this year, it's the teams that have been getting to the postseason. I mean, there's always a team or two or three that gets into it.
Right.
But for the most part, the Patriots are going to be back in it. The Broncos are going to be back in it. The Colts, you figure probably the Bengals are going to find their way in there, maybe the Steelers, maybe the Ravens. The Eagles are there more often than not. Now Andy Reid is there with the Chiefs. It looks like they're on track to getting back in there. So is the key to all this the head coach? Because I said before the season started, and I said last season, forget this thing about elite QB. I would like to have Aaron Rodgers. And by the way, I heard a popular morning show on the Worldwide Leader assert today that it must be really nice if you have Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers on your team. It's a real advantage. That was the point I heard repeated over and over again.
That's some deep analysis.
It's a real advantage if you have Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady, as it turns out. But it's not the key to winning Super Bowls.
No.
You got to be a physical running team. That's what it's about. But then you look at teams that have, the Seahawks win it. Maybe that is the key because the Niners have been there over and over again the last in this little era here, and they are built around pounding the football. And the Seahawks win the Super Bowl last year, and now the Chiefs are emerging because of the ability to pound you with Jamal Charles. Is that the key, or is it head coaching? The thing I've been asserting for the last 18 months is it's depth. Is if you have a GM and a brain trust that stacks your roster because injuries are going to happen. There's it's week to week. Well, the Broncos lost to the Rams, don't you know, because of injuries. Well, you know who else has injuries? 31 other teams. So that's really not an excuse either. Is it the head coach? Is it that? What's your take?
It is. I've always thought it is a combination. It is having a head coach and a front office who are not only good at their jobs, but work well together. I mean, I look at the 49ers, who for the last couple of years they've been great, and they've gotten to the NFC Championship game. They got to a Super Bowl in there, and everything seemed okay with Jed York and Jim Harbaugh and everybody in that front office. This year, you heard the rumblings. In the offseason, there was the rumor that the Niners were trying to trade Jim Harbaugh to Cleveland. And there's this talk that Harbaugh's on his way out, and he's not getting along with the general manager and the owner and this and that. And this year, the Niners have kind of struggled. I mean, I think for all the great things the Patriots have done, part of it was how they built that team with Belichick and when Scott Pioli was there, and how they, you know, they were so great at getting rid of a guy 1 year too soon instead of 1 year too late. While the rest of us would look and say, wow, I can't believe they cut that guy, or I can't believe they signed that guy. It always worked out. And even the Packers, I mean, Mike McCarthy says that he doesn't understand how player personnel works. He doesn't want to have that headache. But the fact that he can mesh with their front office and make it all work has really helped. And then, you know, you look at the Cleveland Browns, who haven't been able to figure things out since they were, you know, brought back to the league. Part of it is that their front office has made poor moves. Their coaching staff hasn't been on the same page. We've seen it in Washington. I just think it's that ability that, you know, as Bill Parcells said, you know, whoever's buying the groceries and whoever's cooking the meal are always working together in some sort of synergy toward a common goal.
I'm thinking now, as we, you know, you mentioned Jim Harbaugh and Marshawn Lynch, and my question was going to be, I have been saying for 3 weeks now, the Seahawks are not going to the postseason. Mm-hmm. I stand by that. I understand they're only a game behind teams that are going to end up right on the cusp there of the playoff cut, namely the Cowboys and or Eagles. Somebody has to win that division. The team that doesn't do it is going to be right there record-wise with where the Seahawks wind up. But then the Niners are, you know, they're these teams are going to end up muddled together. I stand by, though, that the Niners and Seahawks are both going to miss the playoffs. If you had to choose, what's your answer? Niners out, Seahawks out, both out.
You know what? I'm going to say Niners out. And I said before the season I wouldn't be surprised if they were out, simply because so many things had gone wrong on defense, losing Navarro Bowman, knowing that they were going to have Aldon Smith out for a long time. You know, this is before Patrick Willis gets hurt and all these other things go down. And offensively, they still have a lot of question marks. They're so inconsistent. So I said before the season, I wouldn't be surprised if the Niners miss out. I think the Seahawks figure it out, because we talked about that power running game. Regardless of what Pete Carroll thinks of Marshawn Lynch and vice versa, the Seahawks are smart enough to realize that if they're going to go anywhere, they're going to have to put it in his stomach about 25 times a game. And I think you're going to see
but
that.
But does he want to do that? And it's a weird thing, because his brain, when you read his quotes, operates differently than most of our brains operate.
Absolutely.
And Nate Burleson, who knows Marshawn Lynch, sat in this very studio about 2 weeks ago. He and I kibitzed about this subject. And he said, yes, Marshawn Lynch, there will be conflict. He wants to play after 2014. His career doesn't end, right, although his relationship with the Seahawks is going to end.
Yes.
So is there a part of him that is going to, you know, that the beast mode might wane a bit for these next couple months in favor of keeping himself fresh? Oh, the Seahawks fans. The 12s don't like it when you say stuff like that.
They honestly may be the most sensitive fan base in the league now.
That is correct. Chip on the shoulder, I
absolutely
call it. It served them well in 2013. Richard Sherman is the personification of that chip,
yes,
on the shoulder.
Now it's a little annoying.
But it's everybody.
It's a little
Russell
annoying.
Russell Wilson, I'm too short, I'll show you. You know, the whole team, the whole fan base has a chip on its shoulder,
yes,
about that. But I think that they're starting to understand what I'm getting at here. And you see, it's fractured now. They're star offensive player. The thing that can save them. And by
let's
the way,
say
they,
this about the Seahawks. Sorry,
but they couldn't stop. But they could not stop. And what did I say last week, Black Tie? I said the thing that will undo the Seahawks, ironically or otherwise, is the lineup of teams that they still have to face, including those Chiefs, which are teams that want to run the ball. That the teams that want to run the ball are going to be able to do it to the 2013 dominant defense of the Seahawks, which no longer is dominant. And when Brandon Mebane went out, they became even less so. And you saw that exactly what happened in Arrowhead, what I told you was going to happen.
But also, too, if you watch their games, even their pass completions, right? It doesn't look like the receivers are getting open. That's the one team I would love to watch a camera from behind the quarterback.
Yeah.
Because even the pass completions seem to be a result of Russell Wilson scrambling around and improvising. Like, no one's getting open. Like, you can't.
And that's where they miss Percy Harvin a lot. Like, even if Percy wasn't getting the ball all the time, him being on the field opened things up for Doug Baldwin and Jermaine Kearse and all these other guys. And so not having Percy Harvin there, They got a bunch of dudes just out there running pass patterns.
You took the words out of my mouth. They're words that I've said here on this podcast for the last month now since Percy got dealt. That's exactly right. Kobe Bryant no longer commands a double team. That is a problem when he's pulling the trigger as much,
right,
as he is. In the past, Kobe Bryant was a factor opening up the floor for a guy like Carlos Boozer would score a lot more if Kobe were in his prime. Kobe Bryant can shoot all he wants and score as many points,
yeah,
as he wants. If you can defend him with one guy, that doesn't open up anything for anybody. It's just Kobe dropping points into his career total. In the same way, that's what Percy Harvin, the absence of him, it exposes how bad, not how bad. Doug Baldwin is a fine number two or a number three receiver. And the other thing I keep saying, I'll say it one more time, it's not just Percy Harvin. Golden Tate was good. He was their best. He was their best wide receiver all last year. He's not there anymore.
Absolutely right.
Doug Baldwin was, by the time the Super Bowl rolled around, their third best pass catcher. There's no Zach Miller. They have no tight end to throw to. They really are built around Marshawn Lynch pounding you and Russell Wilson remaining elusive, coming around the edge like that. Does that continue to work? It worked pretty well for the last 2 weeks, but of course then they lost to the Chiefs, so it wasn't good enough.
And the other part of this, though, is that, you know, they are going to probably have to go on the road for a playoff game this year. I mean, last year, part of what made them so formidable.
Not probably. They have to. It's virtually impossible that they would.
I mean, it'll take a miracle for them to win the division at this point. They're three games back of the Cardinals. So they're going to have to go on the road. And last year, nobody wanted to go to Seattle to play. You just can't go up there and win football games. But they are a lot more mortal when they have to leave the Pacific Northwest.
It's so true. And yes, they're going to, and by the way, Arizona goes up there this weekend. If they win that game, they will essentially lock up the NFC West, the so-called best division in football. They'll wrap it up and it won't even be Thanksgiving yet. Even the most optimistic Cardinals fan in history couldn't possibly afford. It'll all be done before the month of November's out, before we eat our turkey.
By the way, are there two more teams? Then you look at the Cardinals and the Chiefs. The Cardinals, the best record in the NFL. The Chiefs tied for the top of the AFC West. And let's just get the feeling that everybody looks at those teams and they're like, eh. Like, no one has really bought in just yet. I mean, Drew Stanton is playing quarterback for the Cardinals.
We're not buying into the Chiefs because we saw this last year, right?
This is true.
The Cardinals, on the other hand, is the whole
But it's like Drew Stanton
factor.
Is playing.
Well, they
that's
do
what
take
I ask
deep
you about.
Shots, though, on, like, the Chiefs.
Darrell Washington is out. I mean, you know, I mean, like, they have so many guys. I think they have seven of their 11 starters from last year between injury, suspension, what have you, are gone. And they're still winning games.
The combo of Bruce Arians and Todd Bowles, the defensive coordinator there, the remarkable feats. I mean, think about that. Bruce Arians, if you opened up coach of the year to not just head coaches, it would maybe come down to Bruce Arians versus Todd Bowles as the best coach in the NFL in 2014. Because like you say, no Darrell Washington, no Darnell Dockett. No Carlos Dansby. You know, well, what gives here? How's this team? And Carson Palmer, Drew Stanton. And the idea that Carson Palmer, well, listen, they lost Carson Palmer. Carson Palmer, when was the last time he was somebody you looked at as a guy? Yeah, that guy can take us deep into the playoffs. What? I mean, it was
USC?
Before he hurt his knee. before Kimo Van Olhoffen hurt his knee is the last time anybody thought that.
I mean, Larry Fitzgerald is a shadow of his former self. I mean, how is this? This isn't. It's amazing to me.
And yet they beat, they win every game. Marcus is going to run out of here. Black Tie, we'll keep Kibitz in for a few minutes. But before you run, Marcus,
okay.
What about this? You mentioned Jim Harbaugh, and he's likely to go. You know, I mentioned the Lakers a minute ago, and the Eagles had their dream team a few years ago. The Lakers tried it and failed with Dwight Howard, Kobe, and Steve Nash. What if the Oakland Raiders, they're the perfect team to do this because Jim Harbaugh, by insider accounts, is interested in staying in the Bay for family reasons. He has family in different places in the Bay Area, so it makes sense for him to stick in either San Francisco or Oakland. What if he goes to the Raiders, who, you know, their history with Al Davis back in the 70s was to take all these second chances for all these guys who are considered washed up elsewhere.
Right.
What they tried it this year, in fact, with you know, all the Justin Tuck and Lamar Woodley and MJD and so on. But that next year, Jim Harbaugh is the coach. Marshawn Lynch is the starting running back. RG3 or Sam Bradford is at the quarterback spot. Now, Derek Carr I like, but I'm just doing this for the story of it.
I think it's interesting, and I think what Harbaugh would bring, more than just his X's and O's, which obviously he's very good at, is everybody talks about the culture change, and it's kind of cliche now because every time a new regime comes into a team, right, we're going to change the culture. But really, Jim Harbaugh, and going back to his days coaching at University of San Diego, Jim Harbaugh is a jerk. But when you're a 49ers fan, Jim Harbaugh is our jerk, and you love him for that. I mean, look, as a USC alum, I remember those sparring matches he had with Pete Carroll and the whole what's your deal and all this stuff going on. But, you know, when he took over for the 49ers, all the 49er fans said, you know what, though? This guy is going to get it done because it will be his way. He will do it his way. Now, chances are he's going to wear out his welcome quickly, but that is the one thing about the Raiders that everybody said would change when Al Davis was no longer there. When he passed away, everybody thought, well, everything's going to change. They're going to change the culture. It'll be different. It's not. But a guy like Jim Harbaugh will force you to either step to his drum or you know, you will be gone. And so I think more than bringing in a guy like Marshawn Lynch, which would be great, just because he will force you to bend to his will, that might change the Raiders more than anything.
Well, yeah, it's a really perfect. In fact, yeah, go ahead, Marcus Gray. You got to go. You're going to go be on NFL Now. Make sure you
yeah,
look
check
on
it
NFL
out.
Now. And by the way, subscribe to NFL Now because there's also a show weekly up there called the Dave Damashek Football Program. And you can watch it this week. We have another one coming up for you on Thursday. It runs at 7 p.m. if you want to watch it live. If you don't want to watch it live, you can watch it all the rest of the week as well. Just go to NFL.now to do it. There he goes, Marcus Grant out the door. Thanks
this
for stopping
week,
by.
This week, might actually use the DDFB TV as have that available as an audio podcast.
Oh, is that right?
I might.
No, we got to make our game picks black tie. It's too the you
well,
can't
I'm not
do that.
Saying either or. I'm just saying so people that haven't watched it out yet, I just see. To tease them, like, hey guys, this is you know. This is what you could be
well,
watching.
Well, but it's
right
a
now.
Visual medium, isn't it? And then what will they be looking at if they're listening to
you
it? All right, maybe you do it. See maybe. How it does. That's fine. I'm not going to be upset if you do that. Black tie, people, though, were upset. And how about us not delivering a podcast early in the week last week? That's why we had to do one today, even though we're hard at work on another one for this week. Listen, Czech Republic and, you know, Rank Amateurs and Handsome Devils and Black Sheep, whatever fan base you belong to here on the DDFP. We're going to keep doing two podcasts a week. We just were trying to get up off the ground last week with our new endeavor here. We hope you'll stick with us on the podcast and start watching TV. Not either or. We're not going to do it either or. We hope that you'll continue to download the show and start watching our new TV project, right?
Definitely. Got to, because then a lot of people are saying, hey, it's easy to listen to a podcast. It's not as easy to watch a show, especially while driving. Obviously, don't. But, I mean, if you love the show as a podcast, well, we're trying to do a lot better as a TV show. So please check it out. You know, we need the support. We need the feedback.
Yeah, both things. But, again, the most important part of that is we're not going to stop doing the podcast. If last week... And today, we're you know, it's slightly abbreviated. That is not going to be the norm going forward. So we appreciate you hanging with us. Now, Black Tie, a couple things. You had a star sighting, and I want to hear something about it here in Culver City, California.
Oh, yeah. So yesterday I was thinking about going to work a little bit different today on a Monday. I was like, you know what? I should go out to a diner and have some breakfast. You know, sit by the windows. Grab a newspaper and get ready for work like they do in the movies. You know, just kind of like
sure.
Sit down by yourself and just meditate and think about the
I
day
like
to
the,
come.
I do that on occasion. I used to do that a lot more before all the kids. And by the way, Football Baby did make his comeback, if you missed it, at the time of this recording. 2-1, gave you the Texans over the Browns, and he gave you the Chiefs over the Seahawks. Neither was a gimme. Gronk and Pretty Boy Brady let him down in the yep. Nighttime affair, but still a nice showing. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No,
go
no
ahead.
Worries. Football Baby
used to,
first.
But I like to drink 6 or 8 cups of coffee in that
I'm not a coffee guy.
I just keep bringing it back.
I'm not a coffee. I used to drink a lot of coffee when I was a kid. At like 10 years old, I would drink a ton of coffee, but I don't drink caffeine anymore. But so I'm just out there at the diner having some breakfast, getting ready for the work week, getting ready for the Coach's Show, your favorite podcast, and all
I
that
like
stuff.
It. Coach Billet,
and
Coach
a guy in a shirt, in a Superman shirt, a hat, and some cargo shorts just work in, and happens to be Adam Sandler, and it sits right next to me, and I see him. He's like, "Hey, what's up?" He's like, "Hey, what's up?" And then we start talking about you know the NFL and the Patriots.
How does that wait? All right, so don't skip over that because I can't imagine striking up a conversation with a stranger, whether they're a celebrity,
yep.
A pretty girl, or otherwise. I can't imagine sitting in a booth like, hey, how are you? What's going on? And start talking. How does that go? Who starts the conversation?
Well, let's see. He says, what's up? I say, what's up? Hey, how's it going? And then I ask him. Oh,
you
ask
say,
him,
how's it going? Or he says that?
He did.
He said, how's it going?
How's it going? Yeah.
But he was just trying to be nice.
I don't know. But
he doesn't need your answer.
My headphones
he's just like, oh,
on
good,
too.
Good. You
I had
know,
my headphones on. I was listening to a podcast. I had my headphones on. Uh-huh. So he actually interrupted me from listening to a podcast and getting ready for work. Thanks, Adam Sandler. Sheesh. And then we start talking about Eisen show, the new Rich Eisen show on DirecTV, because I know him and Eisen. That's his boy. So I guess that was kind of like the
oh,
common
right.
ground.
They did a thing before. Yeah, they did. It was what movie were they promoting?
He was in one of the movies, one of the Eisen,
one of the Sandler movies. Yeah.
So he starts talking about the Pats and what they did last night and all that jazz, and then he comments on my food. So I'm out there having eggs, but I'm a little bad today. I have some pancakes, you know. And he goes. His direct quote was, "How do you look so good and still get to eat pancakes?"
Oh.
And I'm like, whoa.
Sounds like he's hitting on you.
No, it sounds that way. It's kind of weird. But, you know, he keeps making fun of my pancakes, and I'm eating every one. I'm like, yeah, I bought it. I got to eat it, you know. And then he goes around the diner and says what's up to other people, and then I leave. It's like, nice seeing you, Adam.
How not? Listen. My first job right around the corner from where we are now and from the diner in the neighborhood here, I used to see Adam Sandler, you know, the people in his movies, those guys whose faces you recognize, but you don't know what their names are in all likelihood. I've met a couple of those guys. And by the way, they're very funny and nice guys themselves. And every day, though, I would go to work on the Sony lot. The first 5 months I lived in Los Angeles, I worked on the Sony lot. And the building I was in was right next to his little trailer bungalow kind of thing. All day, Adam Sandler, this is whatever it is, 99, 2000-ish. So you can figure what's Big Daddy. Was that his movie, Big Daddy? Was that what it's called? That's roughly that era. He's already has the big movie career. He's already made Happy Gilmore and all of those pictures. And all day they'd just be out there shooting hoops and throwing football. And it just seemed like a wonderful life. He seems like a nice fella. By all accounts, he's a super nice guy. People make fun of his movies over the last 8-10 years as not being that great.
Not great at all.
But you have to consider what he's doing as a guy. Think about him as a fella and not as a consumer of the movies he's putting out. He steadily keeps 100 or 200 people employed. All those people, who not just the guys who write the movies, and people say, who's that guy? His friend? He puts his friend in all the movies? Yeah, he puts all his friends in the movie. That's awesome is what that is.
Yeah.
You know, it's another thing whether or not you think the movies deserve your money, but people keep going to see them, and until that stops, that will keep going. I think it's wonderful. I think it's cool, and it's very, if I can make the comparison, it's very Jimmy Kimmel-esque. You know, yeah. Kimmel has, you know, and myself included, always, you know, the guys who are like, yeah, I have some of my chums around here to keep the ball rolling here.
Yeah.
What's the point of doing all this jazz in the rugged business and everything if you have to kick all your friends to the curb and forget about them? You know,
no, it's agreed.
I think it's cool.
A lot of people say how some movie makers, they make the movies for the audience. Some, you know, the artistic type, they make the movies for their peers, the other directors and all that stuff. And people like him just make it to keep people employed. Like whatever.
Right, if he wasn't making money, then you would stop. Why? Right,
yeah,
if they
exactly.
didn't make money, then
make
that would
money.
Be the end of it.
To be fair, though, the last movie he made that I wanted to see and I actually liked was Funny People. Other than that, no.
Well, I didn't see Funny People, so I guess I can't weigh in, but it did not get good reviews. It's supposed to be atrocious.
It's solid. It's not terrible.
I'll tell you, the last movie
6.4 on IMDb, that's not good.
I don't think I've seen any of his movies since probably like, that's one I've missed. I probably saw Big Daddy. I don't even know if I saw The Waterboy in total. I think I've seen parts of it and didn't really get into it too much. But the great movie he made, it's more of an art house picture, and it's an indie picture, but Punch Drunk Love is dynamite. It's not funny, but it's a wonderful picture.
You're going to see Whiplash. Man, some great things about it. It's a limited release. Miles Teller is in it.
Who?
Miles Teller with J.K. Simmons.
I know J.K. Simmons.
And it's a limited release. Yeah, Miles Teller's a young dude.
What's it about?
Don't know, but it's supposed to be really, really good.
Well, there are a lot of pictures I need to see. I don't need to see the wrestling picture, though, Foxcatcher. Mm. I mean, it's getting rave
Thinking
reviews,
about that.
But
yeah.
The makeup work that they did on Steve Carell,
yeah. I saw your tweet about
Channing
that.
Tatum looked ridiculous. I mean, they just look ridiculous. They look like they're doing an SNL bit. But what about this, Nen Black Tie? And we'll wrap it up. I want to talk about the Lakers for a second. What do you think about this mess? This is an apocalypse.
I think it's disgraceful right now to see what Kobe's
really
doing. I think I don't want to be one of those people that's like protecting the integrity of the game, but he's really just going out there, jacking up shots, getting his point totals up, while the whole team stands and says nothing.
His teammates, his coaches. Au contraire, they're saying something.
Oh, I know
now.
They are.
It took them a few games, but I mean, they're just now. What are they? They're
1-9
8-1-9
Somehow still in the hunt for the NFC South.
I got that joke. The they are so 10 games into the season. They have 72 more games, and it is the wheels are already off of this mess with that team. I think it's very funny. By the way, college basketball is already underway, and I, you know, that is too much. Let's wait till mid-December at least. Too much going on. We don't have time for college hoops right now. Why start it now? But pro hoops, this mess with the Lakers is amusing because it was manufactured by out-of-their-depth children of Jerry Buss combined with Kobe Bryant, and the hubris of that collection of people causing this thing to spiral down the drain is remarkable stuff, how bad it is. And they get it. Jeremy Lin knows it. They're, you know, the guys are starting to Carlos Boozer. They're calling them out. And it really is like watching a Washington Generals game. It you know, it's like, all right, it feels like exhibition. What end, Kobe? What are you achieving here?
It's shameful. It really is.
And who wants him now? You know, 2 weeks ago I was saying trade him to the Knicks. I bet Phil Jackson would love to have him to help change the culture there. He could help bring establish the triangle that Phil's going to want to run in New York. But at this point, you know, you're still on the hook for the better part of the $48 million. Would the Knicks say, who would take Kobe Bryant at this point? He plays zero defense. He fills it up, yeah, because he makes a third of his shots, but he shoots 30 or 40 times a game. Yeah, of course you're gonna score some points.
He has a very Sports Nation-y type question for you. Who would you rather have as a teammate, RG3 or Kobe Bryant?
Wow. RG3? Well, I don't know. That's a terrible choice. That's the opposite of Sophie's choice.
I mean, RG3 is throwing teammates under the bus. Kobe's out here just taking shots and doing just him.
I don't know. I wouldn't want to be on either one of those teams with Jay Gruden as my head coach. Yep. And that's a mess. That's one thing we got right. We get obviously in the preseason, we get some things right and some wrong. One thing we were not wrong about, Jay Gruden is wildly out of his depth as an NFL head coach.
Let's bring the OC of the Bengals offense the last few years.
What a bit of ridiculousness that is.
Good idea.
That's the worst loss, too. I declared that on Twitter. That's the worst loss in Week 11. To get, I know the Broncos losing to the Rams is a surprise to most people and everything, but to lose at home by 20 points, to put up 7 points against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who, like you say, are now 2 games out of first place in the NFC South, I hear the calls for relegation. I only wish we could have relegation. That would be the best. I am a Pittsburgh Pirates fan. I think it would have been fine if over the lean years the Pirates would have been in contention for being relegated down to AAA. I think that would be captivating stuff. This Kobe thing, I mean, they're going to win 10 games this year maybe. What's possibly going to change?
I do think they
should
trade
them. And here's the darkest thing. Next year. They still have this next year. What are they going to do? Who's going to go there next year now?
I think Kobe needs to swallow his pride. I know he says he wants to retire like, you know, all that jazz. I think Laker fans right now are Kobe fans. That's the majority of Laker fans are Kobe fans. If Kobe asked for a trade and got moved, I don't think they're going to hate Kobe. They're going to understand, and Kobe can move on with his pride and knowing that he did what he did for the Lakers and go into a team that's actually competing. I would like – Kobe still has skill.
There is no contending team that would
want
Kobe.
Not a contending team. The Knicks are not a contending team. They're a team that could have Kobe on that squad.
Like who?
And
name
get
a team where Kobe Bryant would go. Who would
the Knicks? The Knicks are a legitimate
maybe the
team.
Knicks. I guess that could be. But I mean, you would have it would have to be the perfect storm of people who are having trouble filling seats. Kind of a deal. Boy, it's a mess. But what about my other idea? And then we'll be done. Is what about Marshawn Lynch joining up with Jim Harbaugh in a third location for 2015? That's a fun idea, I think.
I'm not blaming the Seahawks for doing what they're doing. I would not touch Marshawn Lynch after the season.
I wouldn't either. I don't blame them for that, but yeah. I do think even if he runs, and maybe people said, oh, you're so wrong. You see how hard Marshawn Lynch is running? Fine. Under those circumstances, I wouldn't run hard. How about that? Todd Gurley proves why it's not just human mortality. Your football mortality is on the line every time you touch the ball. Poor Todd Gurley, heartbroken for him. Marcus Lattimore. Marshawn Lynch should look at those guys and say, listen, if you have no use for me after this year, then I want to keep on playing, and so I might let up a little bit here. But then that's balanced by Marshawn Lynch can burnish his, you know, his reputation, his legacy, and all that. If they were to somehow win a second straight Super Bowl, then, you know, he goes down as on a different level, a different plateau.
The running back position is so weird in the sense that the position, every position you have typically ends in one of two ways. A really great way, which is a touchdown, or a bad way, which is a tackle. Like, you know, that's really it. That's all you have, a tackle or a touchdown.
Or
sometimes you run out of bounds and maybe a fumble, but that usually comes as a result of a tackle, right? I mean, think about other positions. You either get the shoot, you get the pass, you either get to run routes and stop running, or you can take some snaps off as a D-line, as a running back.
And I was thinking about it the other day. Am I missing anybody? Is there a breakout rookie runner this year? Bishop Sankey has done very little. Watch him have a huge night tonight against the Steelers. Mm. But is there? I mean, I think the Todd Gurley's knee injury now, poor guy, that was their one shot of being a guy, and I know Melvin Gordon for Wisconsin. This is going to continue now. Who's going to take a running back in the first round? Anyway, all right, Black Tie, that's enough. Let's wrap it up here. The thing that I want you to remember again is we're going to keep on spinning here. The Thursday podcast is really gangbuster stuff. It was again last week with Drew Statton and Handsome Hank and Elliot Harrison as we make our game picks. The first podcast of the week, this one, is, of course, our look back at the weekend of action there, and we're going to keep on doing both. But we do appreciate if you can get on to NFL Now, sign up, watch it, let us know what you think about it. In fact, we have a question for this week's show, which is, and it's something we've brought up before, what should Aaron Rodgers' nickname be? I can't live in a world where Andy Dalton has a cooler nickname than Aaron Rodgers does. Let's fix that. Drop us a line, hashtag DDFP, and let us know what Aaron Rodgers' new nickname should be. We'd be much obliged. And
On Jenga pieces.
Oh, yes.
That's right, which we will be asking for your tweets and your thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, I'll tweet that out. All right, Black Tie, thanks to Marcus Grant there. Again, track him down on NFL.com and on the Fantasy Live show. Again, we'll be back with our game picks for you later in the week and with Dave Damashek Football Program TV on NFL Now for you. Until all that goes down, though, it's been a thin slice of heaven.